You're listening to the Hayek Program Podcast. This podcast includes audio from lectures, interviews, and discussions from scholars and visitors of the F.A. Hayek Program for Advanced Study in Philosophy, Politics, and Economics at the Mercatus Center at George Mason University. To learn more about the Hayek Program, visit hayek.mercatus.org. To learn about graduate student fellowship opportunities with the Mercatus Center at George Mason University, for students at Mason as well as at universities across the globe, please visit students.mercatus.org.
It is my immense pleasure to introduce our next keynote speaker, Dr. Mario Small. Dr. Mario Small is the professor of social science at Columbia University, as well as the University of Bremen Excellence Chair. His research examines how social, neighborhood, and organizational contexts affect people's ability to meet their needs and the importance of embedded social capital. Small is an expert in field methods, explores the relationship between quantitative and qualitative methods, and advances creative and innovative yet rigorous approaches to empirics and the social sciences. Some of his books include Someone to Talk To and Unanticipated Gains, Origins of Network Inequality in Everyday Life, both at Oxford University Press. And he is not only a prolific and accomplished sociologist, but has also held many service positions, including serving as the Dean of the Division of Social Sciences at the University of Chicago, meaning he really lives what he studies, getting in deep in his networks, even when it isn't always easy or fun. It's our pleasure to have him here today. Take it away, Dr. Small.
Thank you. Thanks for that kind introduction. Thanks for the opportunity to be here. It's really a joy, especially now. I just met one of my intellectual heroes since I was an undergrad, Deirdre McCloskey. It's a real surprise. So I'm going to talk about financial institutions and racial inequality. And to show you what I'm going to talk about, I want to begin with an experience that either some or all of you have had, which is an annoying experience with a journal review editor. So I was writing a paper about payday lenders and financial institutions, and I was very interested in understanding how these places, where these places located relative to the racial composition of neighborhoods. So whether it was easier to find a payday lender in African-American neighborhoods than in white neighborhoods or in Latino neighborhoods, that was really just a curiosity. Sort of to get us all on the same page, although I don't think this will be especially needed in this particular audience, a payday lender is a lender that'll give you money, often within an hour, with no credit check. And the way it works is you show up, well, historically, you showed up with your pay stub or your social security stub or some evidence that you have a regular income, and say you wanted a loan for $400 or $500, the fee for that loan would typically be, for $400, about $70 to $80. And so you would write a check for, say, $470, post-dated to 2 weeks from today, and then the lender kept the check, gave you your $400, and in 2 weeks deposited the $470. If you didn't have the money at the time, so 2 weeks came and you still don't have the money, you could roll over your loan for another 2 weeks for an additional fee. And as you can imagine, lots of people rolled over their loans over and over and over and ended up in cycles of debt. So I was interested in these institutions. And part of these are among the category of what people, and many of you, refer to as alternative financial institutions, which have some troubling features, even though they can be convenient. First, the fees, as I just showed you, are very high. The terms are very strict. That $70 for a $400 loan due in 2 weeks annualized turns out into about a 450% APR, which is exorbitant. As you know, the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau has been targeting things. This is called predatory, et cetera. I've already talked about the rollover risk. There's a nice study, it's a little dated, but it's still relevant, that about 40% of payday loan borrowers faced an annual interest burden of $500 just from those loans, and 10% over 1,000. This is a population typically made between $15,000 and $50,000 in a year, so it's a substantial burden. If you want to get a sense, in 2016, there were 12 million borrowers that year who paid $9 billion in fees, so it's quite a bit of money. All right, so I was interested in location, particularly with respect to minority neighbors. So I thought, this is basically did a sort of easy thought experiment. Suppose you're standing on a block, how long would it take you to get to the nearest payday lender as opposed to the nearest bank? And I'm happy I had someone to talk to you about why I was interested in that, but that was a simple idea. I'm a sociologist. I'm interested in neighborhoods. I'm interested in lived experience. And I thought, well, this is a really easy example of a lived experience. Turns out it's pretty hard to answer that question. Well, it was when we started, but we did it. And so what we did is for 19 of the largest cities in the country, we identified every block. And from the middle of every block, we calculated how long it would take to walk or drive or take public transit to the nearest bank and also to the nearest payday lender. And the simple descriptive question of this project was, how often is it easier to get to the payday lender? And does that question vary, the answer to that question vary by the racial composition of the neighborhood? That was really it. It's an extremely simple question. So here's part of an answer. So this is for block groups that are at least 50% African-American, 50% or more Latino-Latina, 50% or more Asian-Asian-American, and 50% or more white. And this is the proportion of block groups for which the AFI is actually faster to get to by mode of transportation. And as you can see, regardless of mode of transportation, more than 40% of the time in African-American neighborhoods, the AFI, and this is payday lenders and check cashers, is faster to get to. For Latino neighborhoods, about 35% of the time. For either white or Asian neighborhoods, it's 10% of the time. We didn't know this. I didn't know this. This is actually way more than I expected when I started the paper. Obviously, you're all social scientists. These neighborhoods differ in a whole bunch of ways. So with it, well, let's just do a simple predictive model where we adjust for all of the obvious things that are going to affect whether people want a payday lender around: income, poverty rate, one of the two. It turns out it doesn't matter which one you use, of the neighborhood, the unemployment rate in the neighborhood, the education level of the neighborhood, population density, housing density, the structure of the housing, whether the units in the housing are basically everything we could think of. Commercial density, we threw everything at it. And as you'll see in a second, it didn't matter. And here are the results. I'm going to show you, these are just the results for travel by foot. And what you're seeing here are the predicted probabilities that the AFI is faster to get to. And for our neighborhood that is at the grand mean of all of the variables we observed, except it's either high poverty or low poverty. So high poverty at the top, low poverty at the bottom. But as you see, that doesn't actually turn out to matter. And it's either 10 or 30 or 50 or 70 or 90% white on the left, or 10 or 30, et cetera, percent black in the middle, and 10 or 30 or et cetera, Latino at the end. I'm just gonna direct your attention to the left panel on the top. Differences between the top and the bottom don't actually matter very much. It doesn't actually matter that much whether the neighborhood is high poverty or low poverty. You get to miss basically the same story. And as you can see, in a neighborhood that's 10% white, the dotted lines are the unadjusted figures. The solid lines are the adjusted figures with confidence intervals. And as you can see, look at the top left, in a neighborhood that's about 10%, that's 10% white and high poverty, the probability that it's faster to get to the AFI by foot, it's about 27% in the adjusted figure. And as the neighborhood increases in proportion white, the probability goes down. That's very clear. Not surprisingly, if you look at the middle panel, it's kind of the reverse story. As the neighborhood becomes more African-American, the probability goes up. But what's interesting, at least to me, is that in the middle panel, the adjusted figures and the unadjusted figures look almost exactly the same. The race variable matters so much, it barely doesn't matter whether we adjust for education, unemployment, income. And so we had this result, and we thought, well, this is important. And so we sent it to a journal. And this was a general, not the journal Science, but a journal like that. And the paper was reviewed by an editor. This editor was not a sociologist or an economist or a political scientist or a psychologist. So I want to note that. And they said, well, this is obvious. Black people just prefer payday lenders. And so he said, not reviewable. He didn't even send it out for review. He just sent it right back to us, and that was it. So I thought, well, that was annoying. It took us like 2 years to write the scripts to compute. You know how hard it is to compute the number of minutes? Anyway, but whatever, we got over it. And then so what we did is, well, really? You think it's just preferences in that particular way? They didn't use that language, and I know that language is, the word preferences is charged. I'm gonna bracket all the discourse over it. So with it, well, let's do the following. Let's suppose we do a total contrast. Now, if you need a payday lender, you're probably, you have a much higher probability of being unemployed. That's obvious. Or sorry, being low income. That's obvious. If you, but also being on Social Security, et cetera, because you can get a loan that way. In contrast, if you own your home, you almost certainly got a mortgage, which means you appreciate and need the services of a bank. And in the United States, if you are college educated, you very often got a college loan, which again, you needed the services of a bank. And so I thought, well, what happens if we take the white neighborhoods that are very poor? So imagine we take a white neighborhood that's 70% poor, and it's, 50% poor, 70% white, but it's 50% poor. That's a very high poverty rate. So in sociology and demography, a standard cutoff is one that's 30% poor. So 50 is quite poor. It's at the 75th percentile of the unemployment distribution, at the 25th percentile of the college educated distribution, and the 25th percentile of the homeownership distribution. So it's not doing well. And you compare them to an affluent African-American or Latino neighborhood that has low poverty, low unemployment, lots of college-educated affluent people who also own their own homes. Clearly, if it's just preferences or beliefs or they just like it more, well, here's what we see. On the left, I'm not showing you the full thing because this is just the background to get you what I was curious about. On the left, you're seeing poor unemployed, low-education renters in the 70% white neighborhood. And on the right, you're seeing affluent, employed, college-educated homeowners in the 70% black and blue or 70% Latino, Latina in gray, in green neighborhoods. And the top panel is traveled by foot. The middle one is traveled by public transit. The bottom one is traveled by car. Just focus on the top for a moment. And as you can see, the probability that the AFI is closer is still higher in the minority neighborhoods. That doesn't make any sense to me. I have a hard time imagining that a college-educated, homeowning, highly employed, affluent African-American wants payday lenders closer than banks at a higher rate than the unemployed, renter, low-income, whites. It doesn't, like, I mean, money is green, right? So it doesn't actually make sense. So something's going on. If you look at the travel by public transit, it's a similar story. If you look at the travel by car, just in the Latino bar, finally, things look a little like what you're supposed to look like. Like once you adjust for all of the obvious things, the probability is, of course, much lower. I thought the whole thing, the whole paper was going to look green line, like the green bar there in the bottom, meaning there's a difference. Once you adjust for the obvious things, it goes away. But that's not actually what we saw, particularly with respect to African-American neighborhoods. So we added that table and sent the paper to another journal, as you got in right away. And so it's published now. However, I still like, well, you know, it's, I mean, even though I don't think that the editor approached the question with the sophistication of a regular social scientist, I was still interesting that neither of the tables actually answers the question about attitudes, whether African-Americans have more positive attitudes towards payday lenders. And in fact, if you look at the evidence, African-Americans are about 2.5 more likely to have borrowed from a payday lender. They're more likely to have rolled over. And they're also the only group that over the last, well, over the 10 years that ended in 2012, you can see the citations in the bottom there, saw an increase in the payday loan borrowing. So I thought, well, you know, why don't we just find out? And so that's what we did. And this is what I'm going to show you. So I asked a very simple question. I really like simple questions, as you know, as you can probably tell. I often think, oh, this is going to be a quick study that I'll whip out over a summer, and then it takes me 3 years, because it turns out nothing is actually easy in the study of society. But so this is the question. Do African-Americans have more positive attitudes towards payday lenders than other racial groups? That's it. There's nothing more complicated than that. And so we ran a national survey. This is not MTurk. We ran a nationally representative, properly weighted survey of U.S. adults, 18 and over. We deliberately oversampled African-Americans and Latinos based on the data that you saw earlier. This is a survey conducted by National Opinion Resource Centers, NORC. For those of you who do survey work, they know what they're doing. We can believe the results. No offense to anybody who works on MTurk. But this is not the kind of study for which you want to use MTurk. This is a national population. And all we did is, we did a couple other things, but we included five indicators, one of their expressed preference between a bank and a payday lender, and four Likert scale. And I'll show you what the measures were, and then I'll show you what we found. So here's the express preference measure. We said, we want to learn about your preferences for different financial institutions. suppose you needed to borrow $500. $500 is, there's some several studies by the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau looking at loans. $500 is about the upper end and actually among the most common loans today. Where would you go for the loan? Then we told him, look, a regular bank refers to places such as Chase, Wells Fargo, Bank of America. Those are the three largest banks in the U.S. By the way, this survey was conducted in very early 2020. Payday lender refers to places such as Check Into Cash, Advance America, and Ace Cash Express. These are, again, the three largest payday lenders in the country at the time we did the survey. And then we just asked, where would you go for the loan? The payday lender or the bank? That's it. And we randomly assigned the order of those to avoid all of the obvious things. And then we figured out the results. Then we asked them about attitudes in addition to have additional measures. These measures were based on the FDIC's National Survey of the Unbanked and Underbanked, of Unbanked and Underbanked Households, and also the Federal Reserve Survey of Consumer Finances. They asked several questions that we modified a little bit to fit our survey. Basically, we asked them, please indicate how much you would agree, disagree, or neither agree nor disagree with the following statements. Payday lenders have convenient hours. Payday lenders have convenient locations. Payday lenders offer small loans easily. Payday lenders feel comfortable. And that's it. So we just asked them that, and we just asked the national population, and we said, well, what's the answer? No one has seen this except one audience last week at Princeton. So here's the answer. So obviously five panels, five indicators. In all of the indicators, so for the Likert scale questions, one means you agreed or strongly agreed. That's all it is. So these are all dichotomous indicators where one means you have a positive attitude. And here is the predicted probability that you reported a positive view about a payday lender by racial group. You'll see that essentially none of the predicted probabilities go above 50%. That means regardless of racial group, the average American does not have a positive attitude about payday lenders by the five indicators we measured. Okay, but in spite of that, there are notable racial differences. So if you look at the very first panel, which is the one about which we prefer to get the loan, as you can see, only 10% of white respondents, and this is obviously in blue, and I'm sorry, I'm realizing that blue and red are the colors they use for those old 3D glasses things. So it might look a little, sorry, I'm going to change the colors for next time. Sorry to be bipartisan. I'm going to change the colors for next time. So sorry if it's a little fuzzy to read from the back, but the bottom line is the blue is unadjusted, red is after adjusting. The obvious things you would as a sociologist or social scientist, income, blah, blah, blah. And as you can see on the left, about 10% of white respondents, preferred the payday lender, which is very little. About 27% of Black respondents did, even after adjusting for everything else. Of course, the majority did not prefer them. I just want to stress that. But that's a big difference. And it's actually a big difference that we can't account for by everything kind of you would think that would make a difference. And in fact, a racial difference, particularly a Black-white difference, sometimes a Latino-white difference, almost never a Black-Latino difference, but all differences between Black and white respondents remain for all of our measures after we adjust for everything. So when I was thinking about this, I was like, well, that's interesting. You know, what's going on? And then, of course, I went back to the first set of results, which is, look, the average African-American is probably living nearer to a payday lender. In other words, they're more exposed. And so if you begin with the idea that our attitudes don't arise out of thin air, right? Attitudes are endogenous. And of course, as a sociologist would say, they depend on your context. Maybe part of the context that matters is the neighborhood context. And so maybe part of the reason people seem to like them is precisely because they're exposed to them rather than the other way around. Meaning having them around and seeing them more just makes you have a more positive attitude about it. And so that's what we thought we would answer. And so this is the heart of what I'm going to show you today. Question simple, detecting a theme. Does living near a payday lender improve attitudes towards them? That's it. That's the third study, and I'm going to show you some results. Now, we spent some time thinking about this. Why would this matter? There's actually quite a bit of literature to suggest this would happen. This might happen. First is the mere exposure effect. Those of you in psychology know this better than I do. There's a paper by Zajonc in 1968 finding pretty good evidence that the more people are exposed to very different kinds of cultural objects, literally the more positive attitudes they have towards the object, just literally through mere exposure. As you can imagine, there are school conditions. Any divorced person will tell you that mere exposure does not necessarily mean you're going to like a person more. But there are a couple of meta-analyses, one done in 89, one in 2017, suggesting that for a lot of very different kinds of cultural logics, there appears to be a positive mere exposure effect. There's some evidence of diminishing returns and other things. But the question is simply here, well, maybe mere exposure, just as it psychologically happens in the lab, might also happen in the neighborhood with respect to petty lenders, just like any other object that you might have an attitude about. A second is convenience. So just think about, if we think from this as a sociologist, you think, well, you know, petty lender is an object, it's a cultural object, and you have an attitude towards it. And when you're evaluating whether you like it or not, you assess different things. So, you know, when you buy your car, cost might weigh very heavily. When, you know, I buy this suit, I might worry about how it looks, the color, status. There is evidence that when it comes to financial institutions, people weigh very heavily convenience. So the Survey of Consumer Finances in 2022 asked a representative sample of Americans about their checking account, the financial institution where they had their checking account. And they were asked, what is the most important reason that you chose it? The single most important reason was literally the location of the offices. That was 39.8% of respondents. The survey has been asked since about 1989. I'm sure somebody knows this better than me. And never ceased to be the most common response, even over the rise of the iPhone and all of that stuff, literally physical location. So people seem to respond to convenience. So to the extent that people like things that are convenient, if petty lenders are near them, they're going to like them more because they're more convenient for them. That's the idea. I don't know that's what's happening. We're going to see whether there's evidence for that, but that was the intuition. A third reason has to do with concrete experience. I just talked about the fact that the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau has for many years attacked petty lenders. The narrative about petty, if you look up New York Times petty lenders, I'm sure the most common word you're going to find in the titles is predatory, prey upon the poor, et cetera. I mean, I don't even have to tell you this. The narrative about petty lenders is consistently negative. As a result, since the majority of Americans have never taken out a payday loan, the majority of people's attitudes about payday lenders is going to be an abstract narrative. And whether it's positive or true or not, that's not really the point. The point is there's a narrative out there that you have no direct experience with. And so it's possible that to the extent that you have a direct experience, as long as there's any minor positive attitude, for example, the fact that you can get the loan right away, or the fact that there's no credit check, any aspect that you might consider positive, what it might do is essentially temper that negative abstract narrative just as a result of the direct experience. And so it's not so much that it'll make you like it more. So this is not like the mere exposure effect idea. It's more like you dislike it less because you have something to temper the negative attitude in the world at large. Again, that was the intuition. I'll show you if we have evidence for this. We don't have evidence for all of these. But we have evidence for some, I'll show you in a second. And then the last is comparative assessment. So this is an idea that I think in every discipline exists in some capacity. In psychology, it's called the anchoring effect. I'm on the German decision-making group. There's in reference group theory, in sociology, it's the same idea. So the notion is that when you assess something, your view of it depends on what you're comparing it to. And so the idea is, to the extent that people are comparing it to banks, it's a little closer, a little more convenient, a little more anything, that comparative assessment might make you like it more. And this particularly turned out to matter. This is not something we necessarily anticipated, but it turned out to matter a lot with respect to the banking while black idea. So many of you have heard of this. This was right after Floyd and the Black Lives Matter movement. Social media were flooded with lots of very different examples of different kinds of racial discrimination. And banking while black was one of them, where a lot of people essentially commented on their experiences. You probably have heard some version of this, you know, African-American man wins a lottery, goes to his own bank that has been in for 10 years to deposit his check, they call the police. And one of my favorite, or more, is true. One of my notable examples, I never get his name right, Ray Coogler. This is the African-American director of the Black Panther movies. Very rich man. Goes to his own bank to withdraw $10,000. Bank calls the police, I mean, literally cuff him, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And so you can imagine that as long as sufficient people have had sufficiently negative experiences with one institution, as long as they don't have it with another, by comparison, it just feels, again, a little bit better. So here's what we did. to try to answer that question. I should say what we've done so far. We're still trying to answer it. It turns out it's a hard question to answer. We have that national representative survey that we're going to use to see whether there's an association between where you live and what you think about payday lenders. Pretty straightforward. In that national survey, we embedded an experiment to see whether perceived proximity affected your preferences. I'll explain and describe it in a second. In addition, we went to talk to a whole bunch of people across the whole country. We've done about 240 interviews so far to see, assuming that the first two sets of results show what we thought they might show, why? And if they didn't show that, to figure out A, why not? And B, what's going on? Meaning what's behind those positive attitudes that we saw in the survey. Here's what we found. That's what we did, excuse me. Here's what we found. I'm going to tell you so that you know the punchline, and then I'm going to walk you through it. First, it is in fact the case that the average African-American adult is far more likely to live near a payday lender. And this is regardless of which measure of proximity you do. We used both an objective indicator of whether there was one in your zip code and a subjective one where you reported how close you thought your nearest payday lender was. In addition, that proximity was in fact associated with more positive attitudes. And moreover, in the experiment, it did cause an increase in the expressed preference. I'll show you in a second. The mechanisms were at least convenience, concrete experience, and comparative assessment, but I'll describe more what I mean by that. But I think we still need more, and I'll show you why. That's it. Okay, first, I described two measures. Two measures of proximity. Are they actually closer so that we can see whether there's a reason to examine, to believe an exposure effect? And the answer can be answered two ways. One, is there literally one nearby? We looked at the zip code. That's about as close as we could get with our data. We tried to track, but we couldn't do that for a whole bunch of privacy reasons. A second, we just asked them, how close is the nearest payday lender to you? Many of them did not know. It doesn't actually matter whether you impute a value, use multiple imputation, don't impute, if you get the same story no matter what. And I'll show you what that story is in a minute. So here's the predicted probability of living in a zip code with a payday lender as before in the 3D images. Blue, unadjusted. Red is adjusted. And as you can see, is for a white respondent, after adjusting for everything else, it's about 20% the probability for an African-American respondent. After adjusting for everything else, it's about 17%. The naturally existing gap, if I just pluck an African-American and I pluck a white person and don't think about anything else, is about 13 percentage points. And if I adjust for the fact that they tend to live in different kinds of neighborhoods, it shrinks to about 7 percentage points. For the Black-Latino difference, there's a huge gap, which I think is super interesting. Before you take it into account, if you look at the blue bars for the African-American and Latino respondents, but after adjust for everything, poof, they shrink. Please ignore the other figures. We didn't have enough others to make any particular inferences about any racial group. So I love to make something of that, but I don't think it's anything. Okay, here's when you ask them, how far it is. Here's the self-reported travel time. We asked it in minutes rather than distance for obvious reasons. So I live in New York City. I walk everywhere. I realized when I got into the train station at Alexandria that you can't really do that out here. And so asking how many miles or how many blocks just would not be valuable as an indicator across a very vast expanse. Remember, this is nationally representative data. But if you ask, well, how many minutes would it take, then people can actually think, well, 10 minutes is convenient no matter how you're getting there. 20 minutes is a little less convenient no matter how you're getting there. So that was the idea. We categorized the responses into 10-minute blocks to increase accuracy. The whole story is in the 0 to 10-minute range. As you can see, I'm sorry if it's a little bit hard to read, but basically focus on the dotted lines and the dashed lines. It's about a 10 percentage point gap in the probability that you live in the that you report the payday lender being less than 10 minutes away. So it's something. You know, after you adjust for everything you can think of, you still get the same story. It's marginally significant, but it's still there. All right. So what's the answer? Okay, so I'm going to show you. I promise what you're going to see is the only table with a bunch of numbers, but there aren't even that many. And then everything will be a lot easier to read. So this is the effect on positive attitudes. This is a basic, what you're seeing here, logic coefficients of top panel is where the core predictor of interest is the objective indicator. So that's here. And the bottom panel, it's the subjective indicator. It's a simple idea. five columns for five indicators within, or five pairs of columns. In each pair of columns, the left is unadjusted, the right is adjusted. I'm only going to ask you to focus on the items in bold. The rest is just so that you see I didn't make anything up. But as you can see in the top under the objective indicator, across the board, across the row essentially, the association is positive. And it's positive before and after controls for almost all measures. Notice that it's not statistically significant for being comfortable in the payday lender and not after control statistically significant for having the payday loan being easy. Just remember that because we're going to come back to it because I try to figure out what's going on there. For the subjective indicator, it's a similar story, but essentially all of the associations are positive and statistically significant. So on the whole, I think, yeah, maybe there's something to this idea that living near a payday lender is actually making you like it more. But obviously, these are associations. I don't have to tell you that there's the potential of unobserved confounders or unobserved heterogeneity, or you know, pick your language. It's the same idea. So that's why we ran the experiment. So this is a forced choice experiment. Sometimes the kind of experiment we did, sometimes it's called a conjoint experiment. Sometimes it's called a multifactorial experiment. I don't know the language of everybody, but I think you'll get right away what we're doing. Where basically people over four trials were forced to choose between a payday lender and a bank on the basis of a certain, as a potential place to borrow $500 on the basis of a set of characteristics of the potential payday loan and a potential bank loan. And the key variable of interest is that was the effect of distance in time, again, time for some of the reasons, to the nearest institution. And so the way it kind of worked, you kind of work it through the way we're thinking about this experiment because it's easy. The null hypothesis here is that it was going to be, as I'm going to show you in a minute, that a distance difference of 5 minutes is not going to matter. It's not going to have an effect. And so the way I think about it is this. So I have my phone is not here, but it's there. But I have a Google Pixel. So I don't have an iPhone. I'm sure all of the people under 30 are looking at me like I am from Mars. I know, just you smiling. It's okay. Before that, I had a Samsung. And so I have a Google Pixel. Now, if you gave me the option of a Pixel versus an iPhone, and I'm going to get free because it doesn't matter. Say you can have one of them for free, but you have to walk 10 minutes for the iPhone and 5 minutes for the Pixel, I for sure would take the Pixel. If you reverse that and you said you have to walk 10 minutes for the Pixel, but only 5 minutes for the iPhone, I'd still prefer the Pixel. If you made it an hour, you have to walk an hour to get the Pixel. Sorry, an hour to get the iPhone, but 2 hours to get the Pixel. I probably, frankly, would still prefer the Pixel. I'm just not into the cult where you kind of have to have everything, iTunes, all that. I just don't, you know. If you made it 10 hours, I might think a little more. If you made it 30 hours, I would still think about it pretty hard. If you made it 100 hours, I probably would say, okay, I'll take the iPhone. My preference for the Pixel for sure is strong, and my preference for things that are easy for me is also strong, but I just prefer Pixel so much more that it has to be really, 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 really a big difference for me to go to the. And so the way we're thinking about this experiment is the following: when we're thinking about the difference between a payday lender and a bank, we already know that the average American, regardless of race, prefers the bank. We know that. I showed you the data. I showed you that even African-Americans, it's a pretty big difference, right? Even after controls, you might remember, it's like 27%. That's high, but that means that everybody else doesn't prefer them. And so what we thought is, well, let's look at the most conservative indicator of time we can, literally just 5 minute difference, so that we're not stacking the deck towards finding an effect of proximity. Moreover, 5 minutes turns out to have a lot of face validity. So you might remember the first study we did where we calculated the number of minutes. So it turns out that in the United States, the average time by foot to the nearest bank is about 12 minutes, 12, 13. I don't remember the quite precise figures in the paper. To the nearest payday lender, it's about 26 minutes. It's about 12, 13 minute difference. And so 5 minutes is a narrow version of that, but it's within the scope of lived experience. What we essentially wanted was the most conservative number that is easier to imagine and easier to think about that captures something close to lived reality. So doing 3 minutes, I don't think is as effective as doing 5 minutes. Doing more than that, we start getting into the point, well, yeah, if you make it bigger and bigger, eventually you're going to find an effect. We didn't want that. So we consider this about as conservative a test as is possible to make for the effect of proximity. Here's what it looked like. People were asked, we want to learn about your preferences for different financial institutions. You will now be shown four scenarios. For each scenario, suppose you needed to borrow $500. And I already talked about why we used $500 as a figure. It's a typical loan these days from a peer lender. Where would you go for the loan? I just want to be clear. There were four trials. It was a forced choice. You always had to choose either the bank or the peer lender. Which one you saw on the left or the right was randomized, so they had to think. They couldn't just click the right the whole time. All of the little things that made a difference, we did. We said the bank or payday lender is 5 or 10 minutes away at random, and the other one, again, 5 or 10 minutes away at random. You paid back either $550 or $590, and you would pay in 12 monthly installments as in a regular bank, or you pay in full in 2 weeks as in a typical payday lender. Now, you'll notice that as a result, because everything is randomized, among my options might be a bank where I somehow have to pay the loan in 2 weeks, right? And that's not very common. And so that was a deliberate choice, and it's a drawback of this approach to the experiment. So in some experiments, the analyst deliberately constrains the options so that they most closely match most common experiences. So for example, in designing the randomization, you might constrain the option for banks of having to pay back in 2 weeks because that's not very common. But we still chose this for a couple of reasons. One, there's still face validity in both cases. So even though most of the time in a payday lender, you have to pay the loan back in 2 weeks, several states have required payday lenders to give people the option of a long-term payment plan. Whether people know that that's the case and whether the payday lenders always comply is a different story. But it's certainly out there. And we know, as I'll show you in a second, at least some people know this to be the case. So it's an unlikely but still plausible option. Similarly, some banks have started trying to get, sometimes under strange nudging from the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, and I'll explain why I think that's strange, have started to try to get into the game of the micro short-term loan. And so today it's actually not out of the question to get a kind of loan that a bank would typically not issue, essentially without a credit check on the basis of something else with a short turnaround, whereas 10 years ago, this would essentially not happen. So at least all of our options are in theory plausible. A second reason to do it this way is that the estimation is a lot simpler. So because everything is randomized, all we have to do is essentially to get the average marginal conditional effect is to compare the predicted probabilities at the different values, and we get a beautiful clean estimate. And those of you who are psychometricians, I'm sure could figure out the other model really, really well. But as you've, that's the theme today. I like it simple because I believe it more. So here are the results. So here's the effect of a randomly assigned distance to the nearest financial institution on the log of the odds that you say you prefer the payday lender. The three columns are the unadjusted, the adjusted, and then the last one is the fixed effects. This is a conditional within a person model. It doesn't matter. Obviously, this random assignment, this is just a clarification. This is just evidence that the randomization worked, and you get the same story no matter what. So here, the baseline is a bank that's 5 minutes closer. And so because most people prefer the bank, everything you're seeing is sort of an increment over that. It's the same as if the paid lender is the same distance or the paid lender is actually closer, you see an effect. If you're curious, the unadjusted probability of expressing a preference for the bank in the experiment was 33%. Sorry, preferring the paid lender. The paid lender was 33%. Okay, obviously it's hard to, I mean, unless you're really good, it's hard to make this into a predicted probability. So this is the result in a more intuitive way. So this is the predicted probability. Again, this is national representative data, not a laboratory experiment, not empirical. This is a national population, properly weighted, that you prefer the payday lender. If the payday lender is 5 minutes farther, it's about 21%. If they're the same distance, it's about 24%. If the payday lender is 5 minutes closer, it's about 28%. It's about an 8 percentage point difference between the bank being 5 minutes closer and the payday lender being 5 minutes. That is a lot more than I expected by the same logic. Like for me, if you did iPhones versus basically anything else, the bars would all be the same. Very, very low probability of preferring the iPhone. And for 5 minutes, the difference distance would have had no impact whatsoever. So I think this is actually pretty strong evidence so far. At this point, I'm actually I'm reasonably convinced, in part because of the convergence of several different points of data, that the fact that the payday lenders are closer to them makes African Americans more likely to have a positive attitude to them and more likely to prefer them. So that original editor wasn't quite right. They missed an important part of the story. I'm not salty about that at all. I'm just saying that it helped inspire an important research agenda. But how much does it matter? And so here's the second part that I think is interesting. So proximity matters, but the first question was about the race difference. So how much does proximity account for that race difference? Turns out it matters, but just not that much for many of the variables. And so here, I'm just going to direct your attention to the part in the square so you don't have to look at all of it. But you're saying here's, the five pairs of columns. On the left is the race effect, and on the right is the race effect after adjusting for the two indicators, the objective and the subjective indicators. Obviously, they're a little correlated, and there's some collinearity issues, but you can see they're pretty minor. The results basically hold up. And so you see that 1.2835 at the very top on the left, it gets low, it gets smaller, 1.235. And that's what you would expect. So once you adjust for proximity differences, the race difference gets smaller. If you go down the list across the board, it's interesting. The belief that payday lenders are convenient, it's fully accounted for by the proximity effect, which makes sense in retrospect, but it wouldn't have to be obvious at all. In fact, if people weren't responding to their conditions, if they just for some reason culturally just liked them more, then it wouldn't matter. And yet we account for it fully. So that is what I would that's what I expected based on the other results. For the other indicators, the difference is only minor. 2%, 3%, very, very tiny, tiny effects. And so I thought we needed to do more. And so I thought, well, why don't we just start talking to people? You know, you can talk to people by running a survey, and that's very valuable. But you can also just ask, why did you say that the payday lender was nice? Why did you prefer it? Why did you like it, et cetera? Again, radical thought for some of my colleagues, so I don't understand why. You learn so much. I mean, you have to be careful about what you're inferring on that basis. But we did. And so we went out and we ran interviews. For this study, it looked at 240 participants across four major racial ethnic groups. We deliberately generated a sample that was a quarter Black, quarter Latino, Latina, a quarter Asian, Asian American, and a quarter white. A U.S.-wide sample. We divided the sample in half, half from states that heavily restrict payday lenders and half from states that do not. In fact, we had four categories because we, in the first half, we had the ones that essentially banned them, the ones that allowed them with some restrictions, and on the right, the ones where you can sort of do whatever you want, plus the ones that had minimal restrictions. All respondents made between $0 and $15,000 or between $15,000 and $50,000 in the prior year. And again, that was half and half. The reason we did that, so if you look at the probability of having taken a payday loan, by income, there are two discontinuities in the data. One is at the 50% threshold, and one is at the 15% threshold. So the probability is high, and then at 15 it drops, and then at 50 it drops again. In addition, you might remember that in that prior study by Meltzer, 50%, the 15 to 50% income categories were among the places where the majority of payday lenders in their study were. We also know that $15,000 happens to be, I didn't know this until we looked at it after the data, what you would make if you make the federal minimum wage and you work 40 hours a week for 50 weeks in a year. So it all tracks. So we selected people in those categories. And for these interviews, what we did is we also wanted real people. People on MTurk are real people too. But we wanted people who were not incentivized to essentially check a whole bunch of things because we want to really understand processes. So again, we went to NORC, separate group. And what we did is we gave them our criteria, they supplied the names, then we interviewed. It took a long time. And I don't think NORC would do this again. I had done several surveys with them by now because they had to send your names and you have to try to reach people and you have to interview them, schedule the interviews, conduct them. It took a little over a year to get to 240. So anyway, but we did it and we're very happy and we're grateful for NORC, who was well compensated. In addition to the fact that this was not a deliberate justification criterion, but we said, well, let's try it. We ended up with 47% of our sample having taken out a payday loan at least once in their life. So we have a lot of population that we wanted, the people who have taken out a payday loan and people who are in the income space of possibly considering it. So there were two aims. First, we wanted to see whether, remember the mechanisms, the four? Well, we saw strong effects are the effects of the result of the thing we said could do it. And then second, why was there such a limited impact on the race effect, right? Why wasn't it bigger? So here's what we find, and we're almost done. First, I remember mere exposure, convenience, concrete experience, and comparative assessment. We have found no evidence of the mere exposure effect. So, you know, sorry to lose the junk on that group. I'm sure it's there somewhere. It just doesn't appear to be there with respect to paid lenders. But we found strong effects, strong evidence for the importance of convenience, concrete experience, and comparative assessment. And in fact, the comparative assessment idea went way farther than we assumed, and I'll show you why in a second. Okay, number one, convenience. So convenience figured prominently in how people describe paid lenders. By the way, I should just say one thing. This was not something we tested for, but that appeared a lot. Just think about how you assess any particular object of any kind. Car, bank, clothing store, whatever, and ask yourself how much where it's located shapes your impression of what that thing is. One of the striking things that we found in our interviews was that a ton of people describe payday lenders in light of a physical space. So, and I'm not going to show you the quotes of this, but I just want to put you in that mindset. So people said, for example, oh, payday lenders, they aren't in this part of town. That's only in the poor part of town. Or, oh, payday lenders? No, there's not very many of those around here. That's really for whatever. Or payday lenders? Yeah, there's quite a few around here. I saw one on the way to work, or I see one on the way to work regularly. The way people assessed the entity, the bank, the payday lender specifically, was very much a function of place, even more than banks, right? So I ask you, hey, do you like your bank? You might say a lot of things, but you might not necessarily say, well, they're not that close. Even though people have a preference for proximity. Whereas for payday lenders, it was very strong. Still trying to figure that out. I think it's an important part of the context. So convenience figured prominently in how people described payday lenders. One, here's a person, a Black woman in Washington State saying, look, I think it was just because it was why she had borrowed from a payday lender. It was just because it was down the street from where I lived. It was super close. Here's a Latino male in Arizona. It was a convenience thing. I mean, it's like, almost like they had seen our memo. It was also a convenience thing because that was something that was probably closest. It was the closest one to me that would be able to do what I needed to do. Here's a Latino male in California. If it was any further, I might not even go there. I mean, it would make it more inconvenient if I had to go farther. So it would probably make me less willing to use them. It was very, very, there were lots of evidence of comments of this kind. Part of where it gets interesting, though, is when people start describing their concrete experience in the lender. So yeah, that's often what you would see, no credit checks. And one of the most common responses was, having been there, realizing how convenient it was. So you went once because you needed to, or somebody suggested, and then you stepped in, and you're like, oh my God, this was super easy. Here's a white male in Missouri. Please correct me if I get, you can probably tell I was born in Panama City, Panama, and I don't get all the states always right. So if I get one wrong, just correct me. MS is Missouri. Mississippi, in Mississippi. Thank you. What's Missouri? M-O, of course. Yeah, Missouri. Thank you. Learn something every day. 49 years old. Mississippi is MS. I went to one, and then after that, I just kept going back. So they rolled up once because it was nearby. But here's what they say. I think I chose them because if you pay it off quickly, you don't have to pay any extra fees on it. Also, it was really close to my house. It was convenient. Doesn't take a whole lot of time. All you needed was a check stub and maybe a utility bill. There's a lot there that you have to have experience to know. Right? It's super convenient. It's super quick. All you need is A, B, and C, and so on. Here's another example. Here's a Latino male in Arizona. What I did was, I'm not sure if you're aware of this, right? So again, noting something they learned from their experience that they assume the interviewer may not know. You use the money you borrow to pay the bill with them as well at once. That's why it was convenient. This person was talking about an AMSCOT. I don't know if they are around here. I've never been to one. But a lot of people pay their bills directly. They don't like sending checks in the mail, or they don't have a checkbook, or they don't trust that the check will make it if it's in the mail. And so they'll go to places to pay their utility bills. And so what they were describing was a place where it was super convenient because you could literally get the loan right there. And right there, pay the utility bill with the money that you just got. There's a lot of this kind of thing. Convenience figured very, very prominently. Now, here's where the contrast started emerging. So here's the same Latino male from Arizona saying, borrowing from the banks always takes a little while. It's actually like a week's process for them to approve you. It's a headache. Payday loans are a good choice if you need to borrow advance cash, right? So they're literally right away saying, you know what? Yeah, but when you think about the banks, which we all know, it takes a lot longer. Now, this comparative assessment started getting very interesting over the course of our interview. So here's a Black female from Tennessee. A payday loan, they say, is so much easier to be going with. Just you check your stuff, your ID, and that's it. Versus a credit card, they want all this information, your social security card, even the banks you've ever had, etc. Right? Literally, people see the hassle factor in one place versus the hassle factor in the other place. They make that comparison. It's like, well, yeah, this is actually kind of better. And by the way, just in case you're wondering, you'll see quickly that there's a lot of things they don't like about payday lenders too. But this is what they're telling us. Here's a Latino male in Nevada. I have an account at Bank of America. They're intentionally making it very difficult for people to do transactions in the bank. You'll have 15 people in line and there'll be one teller window open. They're sending you a message. Don't come here. They want you to go totally online. I barely go into the branch, and when I go, I immediately regret it. The hassle, the ease of getting the loan repeatedly over and over showed up in our interviews. And you can see a line. It's funny. If you do a search for payday loan, these are obviously images. Do a search for bank long line. Do a search for payday loan line. You don't see it. There's more. Here's a white male in Minnesota. And so the reason I'm going to show you this is because very quickly we started realizing that in addition to the ease of the loan and the hassle factor, which is clearly one thing that people compared, another thing that they compared had to do more with indignation, which is not something we expected. So here's a white male. He says, I've been with the same bank for 14 years, but they will never give me any credit cards or loans. I've never had a bounced check. They never take a chance on me. My social security wasn't meant to go to that bank, right? They get a social security check directly there. I would leave immediately. Even the payday people were better than my bank. They just burnt that up. They never come off as judgy. They are more understanding. This came up over and over again. Several people talked about the bank. The teller is treating me as if it's her own money, not mine, that she's giving me. And there's a lot of this kind of stuff. But what's even more interesting is that some of this was particularly distinctive among African Americans, some of whom expressly described it in racial terms. Here's a Black woman in North Carolina. It's just a bad experience that I had with Wells Fargo. But I got rid of them and got my money out. I wanted to get a large deposit, and they told me that I had to make an appointment or do something. I couldn't do this, I couldn't do that, and I really needed the money right there and then. Right? Remember, at a payday loan, you walk in 1 hour later, sometimes even less, you walk out with your money. And so the next day, I went in, I got every dime of our money out. Wells Fargo wasn't partial to Black people then. By the way, Wells Fargo, I don't know what's going on with them. They showed up a lot in our interviews, a lot. Unprompted, never positively. They want to know how you got this and that and so on. So there's a lot of this. There's a lot of this in our responses. Here's another Black female in Tennessee, again, making the comparison to not a payday lender. She said, the payday lender, they don't really harass you. It's interesting, right? Think about it. If I ask you about a bank, would the first thing out of your mind say, well, they don't harass me? No, you just, right? Of all of the things you could say, they're like, no, what's notable about the payday lender is the absence of harassment. Quite striking. You just take the money. If you pay it back, then they let you reborrow, and that's it, in and out. Here's another Black woman from Mississippi. Advance America, one of the largest payday lenders. It's like no more than 5 minutes from where I stay. Of course, the convenience part again. That was very nice. It's very friendly, very respectful. Again, respectful, right? So think about the fact that you're noting that a financial institution is respectful. What are you seeing as a default? Here's a different Black woman in Alabama. And by the way, I want to stress, this was a sample we got from NORC of unconnected people who we just called up all over the country. This is not a group of people in a focus group who talk together or anything like that. These are completely independent reports from people who are unconnected. Here's a Black woman in Alabama. They worked with me because they understood my situation. It's great customer service. And I was able to borrow as much as I needed to at that point in time. You know, it's interesting. This customer service, we found this over and over again. Well, it turns out that Lisa Servan did a great project where she worked at two payday lenders. She, that was her researcher. She got a job at one paid lender for several months and then another one at a different one for several months. And what she stressed was this, the customer service. Everything they do is a function of customer service. In fact, she noted that if you go to many payday lenders, you're going to hear your name, your first name, three times over the course of the transaction. Yes, Susan. Oh, I'll take care of you. Oh, don't worry about it, Susan. Oh, that sounds really tough, Susan. Don't worry, Susan. We're going to make sure you're taken care of. I mean, seriously. And I heard nothing about that from banks. Once I started seeing this, I started looking at the SEC filings. If you look at the SEC filing for the payday lenders, well, now there's alternative financial institutions because a lot of them have rebranded. Consistently, they talk about customer service being their number one priority and location and being a member of the local community being their number one priority. Look in contrast for the SEC filings of Bank of America or Chase. Bank of America will just, like, the major alternative financial institutions will say our primary asset is our customers. Customer service is everything. Being friendly, blah, 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 blah. There are even contests in the industry about most best renovated establishment and all this sort of stuff. Bank of America, our primary asset is our human capital. Our job is to hire the best talent so we can deliver for deliver value for our investors. I mean, it's a completely different orientation towards the work. I'm happy to talk more of that, but I know we're almost out of time. Don't worry, we're done. Almost. I'm just going to show you one statistic and then that's it. All right, so here's the process. What we found is that basically it appears a convenient location is an inherent positive. Just the fact that it's nearby makes you think, oh, that's convenient. Second, this proximity makes it more likely that you went and therefore have some concrete experience, something that tells you what this is actually going to be about. So whereas the average American has no idea, the person who has walked in or driven by because it's nearby, will. Among the very first things people notice is a super convenient, super easy, but then even more deeply, super friendly, no harassment. And for a lot of African Americans, but also others, notice the white male from Mississippi also was indignant about their own entity. So I don't want to overstate it. There's plenty of evidence of mistreatment by banks. And there's also some evidence that African Americans perceive it as racial. That comparative assessment, the place where they don't harass you, where you're treated with respect, comes across as a much better place. And so that comparison, I think, ends up mattering a lot. So what I did after I found that, I was like, well, let me go back to the survey and let me see if there's evidence of this in the survey. And so you remember that I asked people, I remember that comfortable variable that, you know, we couldn't account for it with this exposure data. And so we asked people, payday lenders feel comfortable and they could agree or disagree, et cetera. We also asked them, banks feel comfortable. Now, before I started this project, I would have imagined that the answers to these questions would be positively correlated, right? Richer people are used to being comfortable in financial institutions and therefore are going to be happy across the board. And more low-income people are more likely to have been rejected, harassed, et cetera, whatever it is, and therefore more likely to have a negative experience. But the interviews actually made me think that actually the opposite might be happening. In other words, what's happening is that people, when they've had bad experiences with banks, think better about payday lenders in comparison. Because whereas here you're being harassed, here's, oh, respect. Whereas here they don't give you the time of day, oh, yeah, I can get my money right away. Whereas here they make me feel it's judgy. Remember, that was the white man from Mississippi. They're judgy. At the payday lender, they're not judgy. And so I'm actually when we saw the interview, it's like, well, maybe if we go back and look at the data, maybe really what's happening is that the bad experiences with the bank that make you uncomfortable with the bank are going to make you comfortable in the payday lender. So the last slide I'm going to show you is a test of that idea. So just focus on the box. So you'll see that the outcome there, the two right columns, the outcome there is the belief that the payday lender, getting a loan from a payday lender is easy, and the belief that payday lenders are comfortable. And then the relevant predictors are, for the first of those, believing that getting a loan at a bank is not easy and believing that a bank is not comfortable. And what you see is what the interview suggested. The worst experiences you have at banks, the more you like, essentially, the payday lender. The comparative assessment that I think is happening, this is, of course, associational, I don't want to overstate it, but the fact that it's in this direction at all, as opposed to the opposite, which is what I would have guessed beforehand, tells me there's something there in those interviews as well. All right, to wrap up, we now have some answers. So one, I think proximity appears to improve attitudes. I think there's three mechanisms that I've talked about. Two, however, I don't think they're enough to account for them. I don't think this is just a neighborhood effect, to put it that way. I think it's also an institutional effect. In other words, neighborhoods matter and institutional actions matter as well. And that's where we are now. And third, what we're doing now, we're analyzing this data furthermore, and we've started one of the most fascinating parts at this point of this project, because I want to know what are the managers of these entities thinking. So we started interviews with current and former managers of both banks and AFIs. And maybe in 6 months, but the way this thing goes, maybe in a year and a half, I'll have some results for you on that. So with that, I just want to leave you with one quote so that you don't come out thinking, well, Mario Small found that Black people love payday lenders. No, people have a very clear understanding. Everybody loves being respected, but they strongly dislike the fees. And here's a Black woman from North Carolina, one of the ones who talked about not being judged and so on. I don't do that payday loans, those stuff. I did it once because this girl said, oh, you can go and get $300 and just pay back when you get paid. And honey, after I saw the interest, that 300-some% interest on that money, people are clearly aware, I said, no, I can't do that. So yeah, I didn't do that again. Nope. I don't know why I just did it, but it was only that one time. Okay, with that, thank you very much. These are some of my collaborators. I appreciate your time, and I'm happy to take your questions.
Thank you for listening to the Hayek Program podcast. To learn more about the research, scholars, and work of the Hayek Program, visit hayek.mercatus.org. For more information about graduate student fellowship opportunities for students at Mason as well as at universities across the globe, please visit students.mercatus.org. We hope you recommend students to our programs or consider applying yourself.